Blog Talk Radio.
Sonic effects, a place where we can lean in, put our heads together for a short period of time, relax, talk about things relevant to the craft. It's been an unusually active year for us. We see the, not so much change, but a sense of priority that is testing, putting the test to our brightest minds. I think you're going to enjoy the commentary today in Sous-Sens and subtext in Freemasonry. I know I have no doubt you'll find the poetry today, Banquet Night. Some of you aren't familiar with that. Interesting poetry. Poet Rudyard Kipling crafted. Some of you will be familiar with his work. And we're going to delve into symbolism, one of the significant areas of study of Freemasonry. And I hope that you enjoy it. I'm on the 10th of February, 2019, and I look around and it's very cold where I am, and the snow is beautiful, and it's a compelling gray day. So sit back and warm up your room. While much is attention is drawn to the concerns about how we're going to change, it should call to mind some of the interesting pieces about our history here in Ontario. I tend to challenge the notion that we are changing. But we are progressive, and that is a given. So for us to follow that stream and be progressive, that's not change. That's consistency with our direction, with the philosophy of Freemasonry. The story isn't over. The story that began hundreds of years ago is still not done. This is like we can fascinate ourselves trying to put our finger on the beginnings of everything. That's always, we don't have a particle accelerator that's going to help us witness the start of Freemasonry, that singularity. It's beautifully wrapped in the mysteries of time, but we know our historians and antiquarians have given us an interesting reading. And as in everything, we are asking questions again with new facts around us and coming to some very interesting conclusions, inevitable conclusions, just as we always have. No change there. That curiosity, that pursuit of new information, the pursuit of understanding, of a greater understanding, has always been part of our craft. Oh, that we would never change. Don't be ridiculous. What we will see is, and what we are seeing, is some of the evolution of the craft work, where we set about enabling Freemasonry to be accessible to all the communities, any community in Ontario. Ontario is huge. We can fit all of Europe in Ontario. And we did that. We have community lodges all over the place, and you and I visited them. And that has evolved as our communities look around. Our communities have evolved. The roles of people, our neighbors, you and I, have changed. And yet we have always been struck by people who had resisted some elements of the change for various reasons. And we see that today when we see protests going on around the world, pushing back on vaccinating children for measles. We've seen that in some countries that have stopped persecuted people for passing along polio vaccines. This isn't a matter of ideology. These are certain facts. We want our children, we want children to be safe. And yes, it's if you look at us as a herd of 7 billion, it's a risk. We have enough unforeseen and unpredicted risk of viral risks going on that we're trying to step up and prepare to protect us. But this is old science, and it's consistent science. But notice that doubt, that mistrust has always been there. And we're going to be getting to one of those tipping points in about the greater good. Do we, in effect, put some limits on individual freedoms for the greater good? Well, I happen to live in a place in the world where we do that readily. We refer to, oh my goodness, under tremendous pressure, we refer to this, we have socialized medicine, and there's elements of socialist philosophy around us, but in where I am, in Canada, we call that sharing. We call that sharing. And if that is about a Masonic influence, then I'll say I think that's a reasonable claim. Sharing and caring about your fellow man, caring that the old boy that needs that heart surgery is not going to be losing his house, and his wife will be able to continue, or his partner will be able to continue to live there, and we'll take care of that fee. No, we don't. Although we see some examples of people living recklessly and taking advantage, we're there. This is the kind of country that is there for you. My goodness, isn't that a parallel to what's going on in Freemasonry? It is very, very Masonic. So say those types of things and people will point fingers. Ah, there, it's a conspiracy. Far from it. Far from it. It's when you think about it, it's as tribal as tribal. It's as part of nationhood. It's as part of the brotherhood of mankind. It's humanity. To want to, as we know, when strangers meet, some universal rules, fun facts. The notion on the mind of most strangers when they meet a stranger is the question, is there something about this person that's compatible? Are we going to be able to be friends? Are we going to connect? That's the first. It's not, how can I take advantage? How can I look for the weakness? How can I prey on the vulnerable? No, no, no. That stuff, that's a spin. That's a way of thinking. That's not the accuracy. The accuracy is people everywhere are pretty much the same. We dress funny, we eat funny foods, and we listen to funny music. It's all sort of odd, isn't it? But essentially, we're pretty much the same. That's the beauty of it all. So sit back and enjoy the next little bit. This is that audacious group, the order that should never, ever have existed. How could you? We're all on at the table, and we're all gambling, and we're going to. And here's the bet: a bunch of guys, a bunch of men, are going to put their heads together, form a fraternity, base it on values, and it's going to last for hundreds and hundreds of years, and it's going to have a universal answer. Now, you going to bet on that horse or not? We defy it. We are the bumblebees. Little Coltrane to go along with that. The music that should never exist couldn't rob this people of color of their humanity. And look what they did. Listen to this. John Coltrane. This is called Wise One. Thank you. That's from a Crescent recording in 1964. Beautiful piece of music. Beautiful. We want to take us back in time to 1858. This is and the place we are is India. India. It was very much an outpost of the mighty British Empire. In the 1600s, 1612, as a matter of fact, the British East India Company arrived. And that was when the Mughal Empire was at its peak. In the 1700s, in 1757, the company rule in Britain established dominance. And the word, in the 1800s, the word the Raj entered our language. But by 1857, there was resentment toward the British that spilled over into the Indian mutiny of 1857 and 1858. Why am I bringing this up? Because it was the prelude to the time when one of our very old and infamous, famous brethren was born, Joseph Rudyard Kipling. He was an English journalist and a short story writer and poet, born in India on December 30th of 1865 in Mumbai. I'm going to share with you a bit of his work today. He's known to many of us for his work, The Jungle Book and Kim and The Man Who Would Be King, Gunga Din. Perhaps you've seen Mandalay, seen some of the movie representations of these works. And he was one of the most popular writers in the United Kingdom in the late 19th and early 20th century. Henry James, here's an interesting kind of a statement. Kipling strikes me personally as the most complete man of genius, as distinct from fine intelligence, that I have ever known. At the age of 41, he was awarded the Nobel Prize in Literature in 1907, making him the first English language writer to receive the prize and its youngest recipient even to this date. And he also sounded out for the British Poet Laureateship and on several occasions for a knighthood, both of which he declined. He stands out, doesn't he? He stands out. This is the poem I'm going to share with you. Things labeled Masonic sometimes don't have much depth to them, brethren. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. This, I think, does. It's a thinking man's poem called Banquet Night. And this was a poem first published in Debits and Credits, 1926. And it was introducing the story in the interests of the brethren. Ah, That got my attention. That got my attention. Now, King Solomon, line one, King Solomon, much Masonic symbolism comes from the Old Testament, and particularly the building of King Solomon's temple in Jerusalem. And the construction represents the labor of the many masons employed there and is emblematically included in Masonic ceremonies. So King Solomon is regarded by Freemasons as one of the three first Grand Masters, alongside Hiram, King of Tyre, and Hiram Abiff. The Master of the Lodge is traditionally regarded as the representative of King Solomon. So during his Masonic activities, Kipling never served as Master of the Lodge. At the banquet, Freemasons' lodge meetings normally conclude with a banquet. Down, eat, drink, laugh, smile. You're going to hear references to fellow craftsmen. I'll leave that for you. And Hiram of Tyre supplied and shipping materials, particularly timber, for the building of the temple. And he too is an important figure of symbolism. You're going to hear a reference to something called the Garments of Bozrah. And that's a reference from an ancient biblical city in the environment of the current Bozrah in Jordan. And you're going to hear about morning dress, you know about that, and the Masons of Mark. And that's an allied order in Freemasonry called the Order of Mark Masons, which usually uses ritualized allegory based on the building of King Solomon's temple that to convey a moral and ethical lesson. So enough. Here, sit back, enjoy. Once in so often, King Solomon said, watching his quarrymen drill the stone, we will curb our garlic and wine and bread and banquet together beneath my throne. And all the brethren shall come to that mass as fellow craftsmen, no more and no less. Send a swift shallop to Hiram of Tyre, felling and floating our beautiful trees. Say that the brethren and I desire talk with our brethren who use the seas, and we shall be happy to meet them at mass as fellow craftsmen, no more and no less. Carry this message of Hiram Abiff, excellent master of forge and mine. I and the brethren would like it if he and the brethren would come to dine. Garments from Bozrah or mourning dress as fellow craftsmen, no more or no less. God gave the hyssop and cedar their place, and also the bramble, the fig, and the thorn. But that is no reason to black a man's face, because he is not what he wasn't been born. And as touching the temple, I hold and profess, we are fellow craftsmen, no more and no less. So it was ordered and so it was done. And the hewers of work and the masons of Mark, with forecastle hands of Sidon Run, and navy lords from the royal ark came and sat down and were merry at mess as fellow craftsmen, no more and no less. The quarries are hotter than Hiram's forge. No one is safe from the dog whip's reach. It's mostly snowing up Lebanon Gorge, and it's always blowing off Joppa Beach. But once and so often, the messenger brings Solomon's mandate. Forget these things. Brother to beggars and fellow to kings, companion of princes, forget these things. Fellow craftsmen, forget these things. Thank you. Wynton Marsalis playing a tribute to Louis Armstrong. Just an honorable man giving a tribute to a pioneer in jazz. As you hear every time we tune in, you listen to the trumpet solos of Louis Armstrong. Sit back. I thought that was that music was that tribute really helped to frame what I'm going to share with you next. The commentary for this this show, Insouciance and Subtext in Masonry. Let me know what you think about this. If a man has not understood the subtext of Masonry, is he able to achieve an attitude of self-examination? Self-examination, that ruthless task master for those of us who pursue in development, improvement. Imagine an apprentice showing insouciance. You know that petulance that you see, you know? A curious temperament for an apprentice, would you say? Why come into a values-based order, then resist? Freemasonry provides opportunity to learn and apply what has been learned to our being. Self-examination, conscience, self-control, morality, validation, call it what you will, growth is never imposed or passive. It requires desire. You have to want it. Self-help gurus have written many books feeding an appetite of hopeful people who have not realized the potential for change comes not externally, but from within. A master mason becomes answerable for his thoughts and actions. A simple idea is a journey of sorts, one that requires a willing, honest mind. If we define luck as that moment when opportunity meets preparation, obligation is preparation, masonry is the opportunity, then we are lucky by design. Along with all the other fabulous and fantastical parts of Freemasonry is a narrative. One part is unassailable, that without study and practice is inaccessible. Levels that contain the intellectual themes, history, philosophy, and symbolism. One part is of us in terms of adapting as part of a singularity called a brotherhood, our ability to commit, honoring our word. When we are shown the names of celebrities, politicians, scientists, artists who are and were brethren, it is not to suggest for a moment that being one makes one a good mason. Would it inspire a man who is insecure, or is it somewhat some consider advertising? If I am self-aware, then laboring in the garden may well be one path to enlightenment. How we get there through the dynamic craft work makes the difference. All the while, supported by the principles, ethics, and philosophy of ancient and accepted Freemasonry. Little Charlie Parker and Lester Young. Thank you. From September 1949, a few weeks before I was born. Well, maybe they performed it because I was born. Charlie Parker and Lester Young, that's their version of Embraceable You. Not bad. Very enduring. And I agree, you know, with many that say jazz is the best that the United States has ever produced. It's so original and beautiful and intense. I think it's unmatched. We've been studying for a moment, just a little study break. You know, Freemasonry isn't a competition. No, although it's easy to see when you're around such a level of scholarship and dedication that, you know, you want to brace yourself, you know, stiffen up a bit, stand up a little straighter, and remember that you're part of this group because you have the desire and you have the talent, and you've put yourself in the hands of mentors. You know that the mentoring will take you to a place that you may not have reached on your own. Oh, yes, apart from our conceits that we are all that special and chosen one on the planet, and everything that we say and utter is the absolute truth. In fact, what we say and think are absolute and equal, and they are opinions. So here in Masonry, we qualify those opinions with an understanding of values. It's not rank for the sake of rank. If anything, the idea is that we progress according to merit. So what do you think about this? We've been talking about the metaphor of light and darkness and what it means. These are things that we skirt past very quickly, particularly in the composition of lodge meetings. I think we've been terribly unfair to ourselves. There are people that have very little inclination to study the philosophy or the symbolism of Freemasonry. And that's quite understandable in a way. Again, the question is, why join an organization that allows to create that opportunity without using it? Well, in all sincerity, that is the choice that a fellow makes. The path of his enlightenment is different than mine or yours. Not to be disingenuous about it, I think it's a more enriched experience in life provided by education. And it is something that bars and laws and inequities cannot ever take away from you. It brings about an understanding of the nobility of humanity, obvious to many who read and study in the field of Freemasonry. Freemasonry isn't of itself this anomaly that just floats in the universe. It's supported by various tensions and orbits with other ideas that float through and around in different ways. So if we understand, for example, the moral development of culture, we will see how we will be able to reason through how Freemasonry came about. If not put a finger on the individual, it suggests to us that it wasn't the genius of one person, but it was a thought that had a genius contained within it that emerged at different places in the universe, in the world that we live in, at about the same time. It emulates and is reflected in Eastern philosophies, and certainly in Western philosophies. We draw on the Greeks and connect Greek and Roman philosophers with the ideas that flow through Freemasonry and much of our reference. Where I am, much of the reference of Freemasonry is Old Testament. But yes, and we get back to, we're reminded of the Jewish tribes and the emergence of the this upstart, this radical that is turning religion on its head, and was persecuted for a long time because of the followers of his followers. Oh, that got my nose. Here, this is a dissertation on the subject of light in relation to speculative masonry, and it serves especially to introduce in some detail the subject of the Shekinah. Now, you may have heard that word used. That's a symbol of the presence of God amongst the ancient Jews, which was manifest by a special source of light. And that symbol, as Dr. Oliver says, yes, that Dr. Oliver, was an essential part of speculative masonry and its symbolism. From the earliest times, Masons' lodges of a speculative nature were dedicated to the worship of God. For, as has already been stated, our forebears were essentially formally religious men, first of all. It was not therefore unreasonable for them to find some symbol to represent to them God's presence among them in the lodge. And this they did by using the symbolism of the old Jewish religion and placing a representation of the Shekinah. Unfortunately, in many lodges today, this old symbolism has disappeared. And it seems likely that the more practical of our readers at the time of the union of the two old Grand Lodges did a great deal to help this disappearance. Mm-hmm. In the present-day version of Masonic lectures, a section deals with the ornaments, furniture, and jewels of the lodge. The ornaments are the mosaic pavement, which is the flooring of the lodge, the blazing star or glory in the center, and the indented or tessellated border around the flooring. In many lodge rooms, carpets or tile floors are still found to this design, usually with a pentacle or five-pointed star in the middle of the squared flooring and with some form of border around. In some cases, the star in the middle is enclosed in irradiated lines or some other form to represent the special brightness. Reference to John Brown's Master Key, that's an interesting read, by the way, Brown with an E, reveals the following explanation of the blazing star. For the ornaments were the same in the pre-Union Moderns Lodge as those described in the post-Union lectures. The blazing star, the glory in its center, reminds us of that awful period when the Almighty delivered the two tables of stone containing the Ten Commandments to his faithful servant Moses on Mount Sinai, when the rays of his divine glory shone so bright with such refulgence, splendor, and unparalleled luster that none could behold it without fear or trembling. It also reminds us of the omnipresence of the Almighty, overshadowing us with his divine love and dispensing his blessings amongst us. And by being placed in the center, it ought also further to remind us that wherever and however assembled, God, the overseeing eye of providence, is always in the midst of us, overseeing all our actions and observing the secret intents and movements of our hearts. Not to be, perhaps you're not formally linked to religion for a lot of reasons. Organized religion is fraught, always has been. And for some, at different points, it's more of a challenge than others. But the work, this isn't a Sunday morning Christian faith or a one day a week. It's not a Sabbath. Your faith is strong on the Sabbath. This is an application of commitment that we make, not because of where we are, but because of who we are. And yes, it is old school. My gosh, eh? A tribute to the song made famous by Judy Garland, That was a rendition by Melody Gardot. And we heard Stephen Braun strumming a cello like a guitar. It's an unusual piece. Very, very unusual piece. But captivating, captivating. Well, I see that we're drawing to a close again at this portion of the program. We set to our work with commitment. The one thing that you notice that when Freemasonry, when we are at our best, it's when we are working together. It's when we are done with the questions and we're faced with the need to reconcile different opinions, compromise. Makes us dig our heels in more than that that kind of a word, compromise. But in order to achieve, we need to be able to find in order to progress, we need to be able to find a balance that we can live with. If we are all talented, if we are all imaginative and bright and good students of the craft, then we will be able to recognize the genius of one of us. That's how these magnificent structures are created. We recognize, and it's not that everybody is absolutely in agreement at the start. Can you imagine? Don't be so naive. But it's not necessarily because we are moving forward. We need to be able to embrace and celebrate that notion together because we all deserve that. Compromise is very, very difficult. And we can all then celebrate the outcome, the progress that we're making, even though we may not see the results for outside of our lifetime. We pass on the dignity of the craft, one to the other to the next. Masonry has given that opportunity to us. It hasn't given us a script to follow. So this is where we find that the discipline and the authority of Freemasonry really is confounded by the fact that so much an adherence to the philosophy of Freemasonry isn't an act of naivete. It's unenforceable. This is commitment. This is what you and I bring to the table. And as we change, we all respect the fact that it is hard. Change is hard. If it were easy, we wouldn't even exist, would we? It's the work of thoughtful people over a period of time. Anybody can do it in the short part. There's lots of little upstarts that can collect our attention for a moment. But can you endure? Can you create the masterpiece? Well, look at the work of Freemasonry, and you see that we are the product of a masterpiece, not one but many. So this week, as we go about committing those acts of random Masonic kindness, let's at least endorse that notion of charity toward ourselves, toward the people that hold other opinions. And we are all, many of us, understand the teachings about judgment. So I'll just put it this way. I'm not as clever as those thinkers, but it seems to me that we're asked to judge kindly and gently and respect the fact that we are very old. We are very old and we have a relevance today that is being challenged by many, as it always has. Just the challenges today with the production of social media is more public. Instead of a paper coming out in a couple of months in rebuttal, we're getting a rebuttal almost instantly. Well, of course people are going to challenge and question, it doesn't mean that's what they believe. It is what they say. Oh, are we assuming here that everybody has the vocabulary to describe the nuance of the world? Come on. Are we also suggesting for a moment that that type of vocabulary is necessary to express the joy and simplicity of the world? No. Those attitudes are judgments. If you're set about, if your mind is trained to look for flaws, then you will find them. That is an element of intelligence and an element of training. Now, be reminded, as Freemasonry instructs us, there are different ways of looking at the problems of the world and problems within us. Time to lean in, gentlemen. Time to lean in. Time to recognize that we can't just keep these things in our hip pocket. These values are important. Well, if we're going to face the challenge, I don't want to think that I think we can do better than mediocrity or slipping by or making excuse or, my goodness, kicking that can even further down the lane. Well, we don't have to do that. The next generation doesn't deserve that. They need to see us committing to solutions as we have. Oh, I do subscribe to a different way of thinking about, as we do here in Masonic Effects. This is an audacious, optimistic group. Some of the things that are going on around us are absolutely understandable if we want to take a moment to reason our way through. Don't ball up those little fists and start banging on the tables. I listened to a lovely man a couple of days ago, lovely Mason, tell me that, and it kind of caught me by surprise, came across the floor of the lodge to tell me that he hated history. And he hated it when he was a boy, and he hated it in any element of it expressed in Masonry, and that the whole point of Masonry was ritual. Well, no one hates history. No one. But understood what I was taught was not history. It was some version of it, but and it certainly wasn't taught by talented people that helped connect the past with what we are today. Well, look, it. Spinoza was, I think, correct in saying that if we want to understand our progress, we need to be able to study our history. Not the similarity, the focus. It was a trajectory. It was moving forward. Got us where we are today. So I look forward to having you. Thank you for tuning in. I look forward to having you here again in a few days. And in the meantime, I hope that the great architect will watch over you. Be kind to yourself. Be generous in spirit to yourself. Freemasonry is an act of kindness. So when you see those boys with an element of distemper, they're teaching us something. That's not good manners. We can do better than that. Commit those acts of random Masonic kindness. See you all soon. Here's a little Coleman Hawkins. Bye. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.